Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the dog days of free speech, because it's really hot, and there's lots of dogs. So go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on the donate button, follow the instructions, send badly needed dog food. That's right. Okay, so today we have Philbert with us. Philbert, welcome to the show.
Howdy.
Howdy. And, speaking of dog days, there's stuff going on in Holland, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad I'm not there, but I heard one farmer from Holland put it pretty good, I think, what's happening, and he explained that he said the Dutch population is having about 1.9 to about 2.0 kids, per family. So they're just under replacement rate. So he says what the government wants to do is just take the land from the farmers so they can build houses all over it and bring in a whole bunch of more non-white immigrants. I'm like, yeah, he's probably onto something there.
Well, it's interesting to hear him say that.
And then he also brought up the fact that this goes in line with the World Economic Forum's, their agenda, because this guy in particular was a beef farmer, a cattle farmer. How many times have we heard the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab come out and tell us how we're going to eat far less meat and, we're going to own nothing and enjoy it. I think this, what's happening in Deutschland, or not Deutschland, but the
Netherlands.
Yeah, what's happening to the Dutch is right on cue, or it's right on schedule. I'm glad to see him fight back. Probably similar to what happened with the Yellow Vest protests. It's not identical. That was about fuel tax, from what I understand. But I'm glad to see these people stand up. Good to see you.
Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about what's going on over there. But Holland, the Netherlands, is one of the most densely populated countries on Earth. I mean, it rivals South Korea and Japan and Taiwan. It's very densely populated. I'm not sure, like 30 years ago, it was probably 15 million. It might be closer to 20 million now. I should check that out. But the thing is, if the birth rate is, 1.9, or the fertility rate is 1.9 or so, the thing is, the whites' fertility rate, you can guarantee, is going to be about 1.3. And the Muslim or non-white fertility rate is going to be 2.5, something like that. So you already have that aspect of it. You can guarantee that the white birth rate is lower than the non-white birth rate. That's the way it is. I haven't spent too much time in Holland. I was in Belgium this century. And, what was the town I was in that my host was calling the cesspool of Europe? It wasn't Antwerp. It was, I forgot. Not Brussels, not Antwerp, maybe their third or fourth largest city. But, Belgium and Holland are right next to each other and face a lot of the same problems. This is a racial thing. And, people can talk about the World Economic Forum. The World Economic Forum is just one of a number of venues that are dominated by Jews and that are pushing a Jewish agenda. I mean, and I hate being a broken record, but that's the thing. We can talk about the Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum, but really this is a broad Jewish attack on the white race, which, they're kind of nominally part of, but they would like to be... They would like the non-Jewish part of the white race to be inundated with, to have their societies inundated with non-whites and have their gene pools inundated with non-whites. I mean, that's the whole thing. And it's good to see some people at least being able to talk halfway about it.
Yeah. these Jews are sure intimidated by us. They're superiority complex, and they know it's not true. They know they're inferior. They know they're weak. That's why they're always on the offensive. It's the way I look at it, and the same pathology, mental pathology, you could put with Western liberals, too. You don't even have to be Jews, but I just think Jews have this extreme amount of, how could you say it, a lack of empathy. I forget which scientist pointed out the fact that, he made a claim that schizophrenia could be transmitted by words, basically, right? It wasn't necessarily genetic. I forget who that was, but it's an interesting concept. I mean, perhaps it is possible to spread it through, you know, misinformation and through, words and television and media. You know, it could be. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I think they're weak people. They know. I look at it like them pushing a boulder uphill. You know, constantly they have. That's why the left and Jews especially constantly have to be on the offensive. They're pushing a boulder uphill, and if they were to stop for a second, you know, since they are the ones going against nature, they were going to stop for a second. We would gather momentum, you know. So and we already have. You know, I think that boulder they're pushing uphill, they're running out of energy, and you know it's getting heavier and heavier. So because they're having to come down. I mean, another thing that pertains to the Dutch farmer situation and the Canadian trucker situation, for that matter. Also, if this pertains to that, look how heavy that the law enforcement are coming down on them. You know, right? I mean, and Australia as well. It's amazing. And here in America, of course, we have our militarized police forces. And one thing that keeps them on bay, or the only thing you could argue that keeps them at bay, is our Second Amendment rights. So that's one reason why it's good to have that. Anyway, so I don't know how all this is going to end, but, you know, the Dutch aren't armed, so we'll see.
We will see. Yeah, I was looking into some of these, the data. I'm trying to get up-to-date data. I found 20-year-old data showing that Holland is 81%, basically 81% white, and then 19% non-white, but, you know, a lot can change in 20 years. It was showing a fertility rate of about 1.6, but and that the non-whites, it said, were from Turkey, from Morocco, from the, you know, Black Caribbean islands, Suriname is on the coast of South America, and I guess it's got a lot of Indonesians and I guess some blacks too. And it's got Indonesians, so it's. But I'd like to get a little bit more up to date, and maybe we'll find it. But you know, why should these countries be 20% non-white? And you know, a lot of them are going further than that. But why is it? It should be like that.
It's because the honest answer, and I would debate this with anybody. I don't care what their profession or who they are, but it's obvious that it makes Jews feel more comfortable. It makes them feel more comfortable and to weaken, you know, a white society. They feel very uncomfortable the more white people around them. They're afraid that whites are going to wake up and Holocaust them, whether that's true or not. I mean, that's, or whether that, you know, that would happen or not. But I mean, that's the truth. That's what they think. You know, whether they want to admit it or not, you know, I believe Dr. Kevin McDonald has, and Dr. Duke has also pointed that out throughout their extensive careers.
Right. And so now I've gone to Wikipedia and I see 2020 data. It says it's 76% Dutch and then 8% other European, and the remainder Turkish, Morocco, Indonesian, Suriname, the Caribbean, Syrian, and other. But, you know, you're getting this just everywhere, and you're absolutely right. This is Jews feel more comfortable. And, you know, this is something when David Duke, when I first started my collaboration with him, he was saying Jews feel more comfortable in a multiracial society because they feel they can more easily dominate it. And I thought, oh, God. But of course, once he told me that, even though, like, at first to me it just sounded like, oh, that's, how would you ever prove that, how would you know that, but you know, once you start looking around, that's what you see.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a good word to use, but I just think of it as a mental pathology, because it's not just one, it's not just a few of them that think that way, right? It's part of their religion, and it's part of the Jewish psyche, you know. So, and they poisoned the minds of whites with this, you know, that are in the cities. It's harder to, in my view, it's harder for them to poison the minds of, you know, country people that tend to not watch as much TV. You know, unfortunately, it's hard to find anybody that doesn't at least like watching TV. Not myself, but you know, for that, what I'm getting at is the country people or people that live in rural areas tend to be more connected to the land, and you know, they're for the most part working class people, and the way Jews rule over societies and organizations is they tend to like come in and burn everything down and then rule over the ashes. That's it's just their strategy, you know, throughout history. They've come in and destroyed everything and then ruled over the ruins. So that's what they're doing. And it's not like anything's going to change. You know, Dr. William Luther Pierce has a good take on this. And, you know, he thinks in his view, you know, the battle between Jews and non-Jews is the greatest, you know, battle that the earth has and probably will ever seen. And, you know, it's his view, and I agree with him that this battle will not end until one is extinct, you know, and unfortunately that's how it is. This is nature, you know, this is nature working itself out. When you come to realize this, you come full circle, I feel.
I don't actually agree with that, one or the other side being extinct, which side do you think is going to go extinct, just honestly, if you had to bet?
It's hard to say. Well, I mean, yeah, I guess if we're allowed to say, like, if I were in Europe or Russia for that matter, and I was going to say this, I'd probably be put in prison. But I think we're going to win. I don't necessarily think that, you know, they have to go extinct or that they will go extinct. I don't know. That's so far down the road. But if we're looking at pure numbers, I don't think that Jews are going to outlive us. I mean, they're going to be surrounded. I mean, look at Israel for that matter. I know there's a lot of Jews in America. You know, we have a lot of them here, but the rabbis are saying that assimilation is going to be their downfall. So the, you know, Israeli Jews, the more time goes by, tend to not care about American Jews. They look like they're Jews that are watered down, right? I mean, I know you're still eligible for Israeli citizenship if you have a Jewish mother and grandmother in America.
You're eligible for Israeli citizenship if you have one Jewish grandparent, but if that grandparent isn't your mother's mother,
it was your grandmother.
That's to be Jewish. So okay. you can get Israeli citizenship and still not be recognized as a Jew.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. And if you're not going to be recognized as a Jew, it might not be that much fun to live there.
Like, I guess what I'm getting at is
you wouldn't be able to marry a Jew.
Yeah, you make a good point. So I've heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, I've never been to Israel, thank God, but from what I understand, a lot of Israeli Jews look at the Jews in America as kind of watered down Jews, and they don't, there's kind of like, oh, you're not real Jewish, you don't even live you know, in the Middle East, you know. So I don't know, am I wrong? Or
there are differences in attitudes between Israeli Jews and American Jews. And I just know I was in my chiropractor's office once, and he was getting ready to go home, and he got this phone call, and I just could hear his side of the phone call. And he's like, no, I'm leaving here at 5. What do you mean you're going to be over here at 5? No, what? And then like the call ends. And so obviously the guy on the other end of the phone was saying, oh, you're going to be there till 5? Okay, I'll see you at 5. And then hangs up the phone. And my chiropractor just, like, rolls his eyes and says, Israelis.
Oh, that's Israeli. Hilarious.
So he himself was Jewish.
Right away. You understood right away.
Yeah, but, you know, it's like, oh, it's Israelis. Because they're pushy, and they've got this attitude, this superiority complex. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard the rabbis, like I said, Israeli Jewish rabbis, rather, that have said more than one, claim that assimilation, especially in America, is going to be their downfall. And like, so he doesn't like the fact that Jews are marrying non-Jews in America. A lot of them don't. So, and the way I see it, I don't claim to be an expert or know everything, but the way I tend to see things is that once Israel is swallowed up in the Middle East, like the Jewish power here is really going to start to wane. As to when that's going to be, I don't know. That's anybody's guess. That's my theory.
I mean, I think that if the Goyim were prepared just to not be afraid of the taboo and just speak about Jewish power, so much of the Jewish power goes away just by people honestly talking about it. Because how much of their power is based on the media, for instance?
It's you're right. It's based on self-policing. They have built self-policing in self-policing of speech, especially into our curriculum of schools, and like you said, the media. Only it's arguable that the media has been more effective. I would say it has.
The media has been massively effective.
Yeah, and more than the school curriculum, I would argue.
You look at the war between, or the battle, whatever you want to call it, the struggle between Donald Trump and the media. And the media, I mean, okay, so he calls the media fake news, and, you know, that's caught on. But no, he got his butt whipped, and he got pushed out of office. And the whole time he was in office, he had his hands tied. He was able to get very little done. Got a little bit done, but not very much. And he was losing to the media. This, you know, the coronavirus is a media creation. The war in Ukraine, media creation. There's that guy on Fox Business News with the Australian accent. I don't know what his name was. And he was interviewing Colonel Douglas McGregor, and Douglas McGregor was being critical of the Ukrainians. And the host, it's an economic show. He says, "What? It sounds like you don't think that Zelensky's a hero." Oh my God, you don't think Zelensky's a hero? So I mean, they've been able to push all this stuff and the Black Lives Matter stuff, and they just push and push and push, and they've gotten away with so much.
Yeah, but he's one of the chosen. He's one of the chosen. Of course, he's a hero.
Yeah, he's a hero. He's a hero. But you know, when you think about it, if you could have somebody who could be on Fox News and reply, "Well, you know, Zelensky's a Jew, and he's sending all the non-Jews to fight in a war that there's absolutely no chance they're going to win. So he's just throwing all these people into a meat grinder. There's no chance that they're going to win. The longer it goes on, the more these Ukrainian soldiers and conscriptees are going to die." And of course, the Jews were let out of Ukraine. The Jews were let out of Ukraine. You had that. I don't know if you saw it, but on right after this started, there was some guy with a Dayglow vest on that had Hebrew letters, and he was on, I guess he was on both Tucker's show and Hannity's show or other Fox News shows, and he was shilling for money. He was saying, you know, we're helping people get out of Ukraine. Well, he was helping Jews get out of Ukraine. We're helping with the refugees. And Tucker earlier in the show had announced that Zelensky had reported that Zelensky had announced that all men from age 18 to 60 were not allowed to leave the country. So Tucker was telling the guy, he says, "Well, no, I mean, aren't you going to have trouble with that? Because Zelensky has just ordered all, men 18 to 60 to stay in the country." And this Jew says, "Oh, no, we have a way. But we, you know, you're going to put up our 1-800 number. You have to put up our 1-800 number? Our website, because people can donate to us. We need money so we can help with the refugees."
But
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on Long-Term Food Storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
And this Jew says, oh, no, we have a way. We have a way. But we, you know, you were going to put up our 1-800 number. You have to put up our, is it on the screen? Our 1-800 number, our website, because people can donate to us. We need money so we can help with the refugees. You said you were going to put up the website, and he was really pushy like that, and Tucker seemed genuinely befuddled. He always, you know, it's Tucker always says things like, "Well, I'm confused. Explain it to me." But
right.
But this time he really seemed confused, and I don't know what
deer in the head, or deer in the headlights kind of look sometimes.
Yeah, because he had just reported that men weren't allowed to leave the country, and then you got this Jew, this with like an Israeli, he's got Hebrew written on his vest, and he said, "Oh no, we have ways. We can get our people out." And this is what you had: the Jews were able to leave. Nobody else. And now they're at the point where they're conscripting women. And it's just a meat grinder. There was never any prospect that Ukraine was going to come out on top militarily. Never any prospect. And so you throw all these, you got a Jewish president throwing all these throwing the goyim into a meat grinder. And then you have to remember that what's gone on in the over the past 100 years in Ukraine, and what have, like, the Jews and the non-Jewish Ukrainians have had rather difficult relations. You know, you had, if you want to take the Jewish side first, the Jews complain that the Ukrainians collaborated with Hitler. And they did. And that was in the 1940s. They got invaded, and they collaborated with Hitler. And then, of course, why did that happen? Well, because in the 1930s, the Jewish Bolsheviks, and it was Jewish Bolsheviks, they imposed this insane collectivization of agriculture, and this emphasizing of industry, extracting of all of the surplus agriculture from Ukraine and other agricultural areas, selling the produce overseas, and then using the proceeds to build up industry. Well, it led to famine. So you had this Holodomor, and at least, you know, this is the history. So these are two groups of people. It's not just like, oh, well, there are Ukrainians who just happen to be Jewish. These are two groups of people who have had very confrontational, adversarial relations over the past couple of centuries or more. And so, you know, given the history of, say, whites and blacks in the United States, for instance, if Obama had let all of the blacks go to wherever, and then was sending all of the whites into a meat grinding war against China, where we had no chance of winning, and everybody was going to die, would people rally around and say, "Isn't Obama a hero?"
Yeah, Obama's a negroid that was put into power by Jews, wouldn't he?
Oh yeah, I mean he was. He had like his two top campaign people, his two top aides were David Axelrod and Rahm Emanuel.
Rahm Emanuel, that's the one I was thinking of. Okay, and is he's not still the mayor, is he?
No, he's the ambassador to Japan.
Okay,
they wanted to make Biden administration was going to make him ambassador to China, except the Chinese didn't want him.
Okay. Does he speak Mandarin?
No, he probably speaks Hebrew.
Right.
The Japanese don't. I mean, like the Japanese aren't going to tell the Americans no about an ambassador. But honestly, he doesn't seem to fit in very well there. He's not particularly well liked. But you know, whatever. I will say that if I was a Chicagoan and I had to choose between Mayor Rahm Emanuel and Mayor Lori Lightfoot, I would definitely pick Mayor Rahm Emanuel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those were the days.
Well, have you got a ham radio yet?
No, I don't have a ham. I have a shortwave.
Is that GMSR, the General Mobile Family Service, or whatever it is?
I don't know.
General Mobile Radio Family Service or something like that. That's a free, it's a free certification you can get for, or maybe it's not free, but you don't have to take a test. I think you have to like pay like $15 or something. And you get a little license for 10 years or 5 years or something like that.
And what's that for?
It's different than ham. You don't get the 70 or 1.2 meter and 70 centimeter.
Well, is that Citizens Band, like Citizens Band radio, the CB radios that were popular in the 70s?
No, because you don't need a license, any kind of license to do CB. Let me look at the frequency range real quick.
Okay. Now, the shortwave, you know, it's just all you need is a shortwave radio, and you can listen. And this was, I was interested to see Andrew Anglin writing about the early shortwave, the early, white nationalist movement from the 90s, which was at least partly centered on shortwave. And I used to listen to WWCR, which was a shortwave broadcaster out of South Carolina, I think Columbia, or somewhere in South Carolina. But you know, I also used to listen to the BBC and what was it, Havana, Radio Havana, and some others.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. RL, 5 stars. Been taking this for 2 months now. I feel better. Have more energy. April, my husband started taking Extendivite, and he said he feels much better and has more energy. EW, need to try. Everyone needs this for their health. Great product, great people. Josie, it works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. JC, great product. Has worked well these last few years. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Broadcaster out of South Carolina, I think Columbia, or somewhere in South Carolina. But, you know, I also used to listen to the BBC and, what was it, Havana, Radio Havana, and some others.
Yeah, so the General Mobile Radio Service, GMRS, is a licensed radio service that uses channels from 462 megahertz to 467 megahertz. And the most common use of the GMRS channels is for short distance, two-way voice communications using handheld radios, mobile radios, and repeater systems. So you can, I didn't know you can get on a repeater with that. It also says, I'm on the FCC site here. It says the FCC expanded GMRS to allow short data messaging and GPS location, too.
Okay, 400 megahertz. We're talking about that. Now, FM.
462. Uh-huh. 462 to 467, yeah.
Well, that's a very narrow band.
Yeah, yeah, it's very, yeah. That's why you don't need to take a test to have the license.
And that's, you know, considerably higher frequency than FM. FM is 88 megahertz to 108 megahertz, correct?
Yes.
And then AM is, you know, 1 megahertz plus or minus half a megahertz.
So yeah, F is 200 to 108 megahertz, and then yeah, AM is 10 kilohertz to 1600 kilohertz. So AM is lower fidelity with higher range, and FM is lower range with higher fidelity. that's why AM radio has historically been used for like talk radio, and FM is better for music. You need, you know, music has a higher bandwidth than just, you know, a voice conversation.
Yeah, but you know, you get perfectly good music over AM. I don't know.
And then, so with a radio, you can get on UHF and VHF too, along with some of the FM bands.
So VHF is pretty close to FM, correct?
Yes, it's just under FM. It's a little bit tighter of a frequency range.
Like, and channels 2 through 6, I believe, are right under FM, and then 7 through 13 are somewhere a little bit different, right? That's my recollection.
Yeah, UHF is 300 megahertz to 3 gigahertz, and VHF is 30 megahertz to 300 megahertz.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, there's a book on this. I've been studying for my ham test, actually. I'm about ready to take it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You damn near have to know, like, a beginner's or an entry level to electrical engineering. There's a lot covered on the ham radio test. It's more than just knowing about radio frequencies. It's about knowing the components of the electronics in and of themselves too.
But you don't need Morse code anymore.
Not anymore. They took that away, and I think it was a while back. I think around 2010 or somewhere around there. Maybe it was later, but yeah, it was a few years back.
All right. So, and then I guess, let's see. Shortwave would be somewhere above AM, I guess.
Let me look at this. Yeah, I'm not sure what you're referring to.
3 to 30 megahertz, whereas AM is around 1 megahertz. Okay.
All right. So anyway, yeah, you have a radio. What kind of radio is it?
I have a couple. I have a few. They're just little things that I got at, or actually my brother got at Radio Shack and gave to me some years ago. So I've just had them lying around. But we used to listen to shortwave 50 years ago or more during the Vietnam War. We'd listen to BBC. The British weren't involved in the Vietnam War, and the BBC, you'd hear some critical news regarding the Vietnam War. So we used to listen to it. I'd hear about Prime Minister Heath and this kind of stuff. And I used to listen to it like in the late 80s. I'd listen to Radio Pyongyang. I'd listen to Radio Moscow. And Radio Moscow was really interesting in the closing days of the Soviet Union. Because one of the things that fell apart towards the end of the Soviet Union was their censorship regime.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it was state owned, and so broadcasters, radio hosts, and whatnot, the programmers, they didn't have to worry about corporate sponsors, right? But the state control fell apart, and so there was this brief period of time in 1991 where you would have people telling jokes where the, you know, the butt of the jokes would be these Jewish bastards.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what are you talking about? Like, somebody would be telling a joke, and instead of saying, like, one guy said to the other, it, like, all of a sudden one would become a Jew and he would say something, and then the other guy would say, what are you talking about, you Jewish bastard? It's this. And it's like completely gratuitous anti-Semitism, for instance. You could hear that. So it was, but you know, but also just a lot of criticism of the government. You had just all sorts of different people, wacky people sometimes. And so it was amazing. 1991 Radio Moscow. So you had that. Yeah, I've been listening to it short. I don't need to listen to it the way I used to, because you can get a lot of this stuff on the internet now. I found Radio Pyongyang. I found this website that just streams Radio Pyongyang.
Okay.
By the way, it's good music. It's mostly music.
Okay, well, didn't you use some of that for your music or like bumper music?
That's right. So the bumper music, and I don't use it much anymore because that was what I had sent to RBN, and when I do live shows, that they use Radio Pyongyang for some of my bumper music during live shows. But I almost never do live shows anymore because of my busy work schedule. It interferes with my work schedule. So I should make a so like on a show like this will have your compositions as the bumper music. So I have what I call a template. I have a sound file that's got the bumper music in the right places. And then like on a day like today, when I'm just not worrying about where the commercial breaks go, we're just going to record for like 47 minutes. And then I just splice it into the, so I use the Audacity program, if you're familiar with that. And I
have a free one.
Yeah, it's free and it's powerful. It works really well. And so I have the bumper music track on one track. And then I have a second track where I'm just going to take this. And, you know, our first segment is about 19 minutes, 30 seconds minus bumper music. So I get that. I'll stick that in. And then, you know, the one after that's going to be about 6 minutes, 15 seconds. And I just chop it up and put it in a second track so that there's a little bit of overlap between the talking and the music. And that's what I do. I'm giving away my trade secrets, but you know, it's kind of fun. And so later in the week, I've got, oh yeah, by the way, later in the week, I've got a big, big shoe with, Dr. David Duke. It's actually going to be, it's a good show because what happened is we were having a talk and, you know, we had a talk and he was like, wow, you know, these were really good ideas. We ought to do this on a show sometime. I said, yeah, too bad we weren't recording it. And then he says, oh, actually, I was recording it. And so we have that. And so I splice it in. Now, I don't have David on my show very often, but when I do, I use my my 1970s soul music for bumper music because, you know, when you think 1970s soul music, you think Dr. David Duke, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, I do.
Exactly.
Yeah. So... So anyway, that'll be a good show. But yeah, that's how I do these things. And I don't have a North Korean Radio Pyongyang template file, but I should make one. Which guest should I use it? Maybe I should use it for Andy Hitchcock.
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking my bumper music is getting pretty old. I really need to do some more. But I'm to anybody who is wondering, or in case anybody is wondering. I'm actually building a new studio, so that's quite the process, building a new home and a new studio and a cabin. So buy land, folks. buy land.
I'd like to come by and see that. Maybe we can get together and do another parody song. That would be good.
Yeah. I'm still in a band, so I still play, but I just don't have enough time, and a lot of my stuff is, you know, packed up away. And when you're building a new place, it's just unreal everything you have to go through. So
yeah,
we'll get there. We'll get there someday. I'm gonna have a really nice studio. I'll tell you that.
Well, by the way, speaking of the music, on the Monday show, I do a China themed show usually on Mondays. If Kato's around, we do something. And the last song I always play is Chinatown, My Chinatown, which is a 100-year-old song. I guess it's about San Francisco. And the version I usually use is from some band in Serbia. This is a jazz standard. So a lot of jazz bands play it. And it's from Serbia. And the Serbian band is play it, and there's some Serbian woman who sings it. I don't even know if she speaks English, but she sings, you know, she sings well. And so Chinatown, My Chinatown. But this week, recently I was at kind of a jazz show, and the band was going to play Chinatown, My Chinatown. And I said, oh, I can sing that. And so they let me sing it. And that's what I used for Monday's show. In case anybody heard it, that was me at the end. So,
you should play China Girl by David Bowie. It has my favorite guitar player on there, Stevie Ray Vaughan. Do you know Stevie Ray Vaughan did a little studio work for David Bowie?
How about that? I did not know that. China Girl, I can kind of picture that song.
He played guitar on China Girl and also the Let's Dance. That was also Stevie Ray.
Yeah, that was a good song. Well, you know who likes David Bowie? Bowie, I guess, is Richard Carey, the host of the show Before Mine. That's his theme song is Richard Carey is a David Bowie song I wasn't familiar with. 1984. Are you familiar with it?
Yeah, I like David Bowie. I think I've heard about all this stuff. I'm not sure which one that is, though. Maybe I haven't.
Well, listen to Richard Carey's show sometime. It's the opening theme song.
David Bowie did come out and say he was gay when he really wasn't, because his wife told him to act like he was gay and he would get more followers. You know, I don't know if his was Jewish or not, but yeah, he did that for like the first part of his career, and then he came out and said, "No, I'm not really gay."
That was like this big thing in the 1970s. All this androgyny and Rod Stewart supposedly being gay, which is hard to imagine, because these people could get women, and so why would they be gay?
Yeah, probably paid to say that, you know, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, yeah, so do you know the band Sweet?
Yes, the Ballroom Blitz.
Ballroom Blitz, that's right. And in the Ballroom Blitz, you know, they have multiple singers, and I guess it's the bass player who sings the gay sounding part. The band in the back said, "Everyone attack it," you know.
Oh,
you
know. Right.
And that guy, like, they did a couple of videos for that, and in one of the videos, he made himself look real pretty. He was looking real pretty, but you know, he's not even gay. Like, these guys were all married and had stable marriages.
You know, I used to play that song in a cover band I was in, and we had a female lead singer, and she did that part.
Yeah, well, I mean, I did that. I did part of a parody of it, which I played. I did a parody themed show in May. I thought it was pretty good. It was supposedly Engelbert Poindexter at some like Holiday Inn in New Jersey. I forgot what town it was at, but yeah, it was just a bunch of karaoke, and I did the Ballroom Blitz, and I didn't have all the lyrics ready, so I just.
Well, that's a pretty wordy one too. That's pretty wordy.
It's pretty wordy, but I never finished it, so I only played the first half of it, and then I let it go into the commercial break because I didn't have the second half ready, but. Victoria Nuland said Japan. No, what was it? And then Victoria Nuland said Ukraine is a Jew land. Yeah. And, I'd like to do that one. That was a song that when it was a popular song, I didn't actually like it. And then last winter, I stumbled across it, and all of a sudden, I became obsessed with it. It's one of those things.
Okay.
I don't know. That happens sometimes. There are songs that, like, I didn't particularly like when they came out, and then years later, I stumble across them and like them. There's one song, though, that I never even heard of when it came out, and then I stumbled across it, and that's Gangnam Style. Do you know Gangnam Style?
Yeah, I remember that fad. That wasn't just a song. That was like an entire fad for about half a year.
And I didn't find out about it until about 2 years later. And, you know, and by that time...
Korean, right?
It was Korean, yeah. And I'd been to Gangnam. And you know, I'd watched the video. And, of course, the video is recent. And my experiences in Gangnam were from the last century. They were from the 20th century. But, Gangnam was nice enough back then, but now it's like really flashy. But I did recognize some of the places. But it was just, I don't know. I just became obsessed with it. And you could get all sorts of stuff. You could get like on Actually, I went to Gangnam after that. After that became a hit, I had some business, and I was it 2014? I was in Seoul, and I went to Gangnam, and I got some socks, some Gangnam-style socks, and I got a toothbrush, an electric toothbrush, that when you turn it on, it plays Gangnam Style.
Okay.
I don't want to wear it. I don't want to use it because I'll wear out the toothbrush. It doesn't have like a replaceable, but it's electric, and it was really cool. So I don't know. That's what I do in my free time sometimes.
Well, that sounds fun. Yeah. The life of Strategic Slattery.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Tune in Saturday mornings, 8 to 10 Central, to the Alternative Media with your host, Barron. If you've not been listening, this is some of what you've been missing.
2,000 mules. Like you like to say occasionally, Farron, in your face.
They might have a set of lactating mammaries available that could provide milk for their adopted children.
Complicit news media, all pulling off this gigantic fraud.
Rhino, neocon, cucks.
There's this wonderful thing that's called Vote With Your Feet. Move to California.
I am a conspiracy factualist, and everyone else is a reality theorist.
Hundreds, if not thousands, of ships came out of nowhere.
Give me liberty or let's give you death.
Any excuse to go in and kill yourself for this fraud of a government. This goes back 100 years.
When they come for your gold, give them a lead. And when they come for your guns, give them the bullets first. And God help us all.
Hi, Tom Bolton for EaseOff. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC. 417-932-6419.
Thank you.
I don't know. That's what I do in my free time sometimes.
Well, that sounds fun. Yeah. The life of Mr. Strategic Slattery. I don't know.
Doing what I have to do sometimes. Just got to do what you got to do.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Being a man.
Yep. Well, we are getting close to the end of the show. Did we cover all the bases we were going to cover?
I guess so, yeah. I'm going to go back to studying my x86 ARM assembly language code.
Yeah, we got to do what we got to do, and sometimes that is studying computer code.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Learning how to program Raspberry Pis for home automation and stuff. It's pretty interesting. So everybody needs to keep that mind busy. Don't watch the Electronic Rabbi, you know. And our people need to learn technology more, I think, you know, especially people that know what we know. You know, they've had a, like we were talking about earlier, they have a stranglehold on the media. And if you learn technology, everybody that does that, we can help unclamp that grip that they have on it. So,
yeah, they have a lot of power in the media, and it's very vulnerable. And, you know, if we can start talking honestly and ignoring the taboo, their media power dissolves. But just because their media power dissolves doesn't automatically transfer it to us. We have to be able to do media ourselves.
I know a lot of people like to be critical of Andrew Torba, and I can be too, but if we can imagine if we had 100,000 Andrew Torbas making our own web applications and websites, think of where we would be.
Think of where we would be. We would be here, and we would be ruling ourselves. That's what where we would be. We'd be in charge of our society.
Dedicated white power IT support as well.
Okay. Well, with that, I want to thank you for joining me.
Oh, glad to be here, and I will catch you on the flip side next time.
Okay, and I will be back again tomorrow with Dr. David Duke. I think that's where I'm going to do it. Yeah, I think I will. And a very exciting episode of National Beaver Radio.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.